this club's about winning trophies. I'm inexperienced in a lot of those things.
Sorry for smiling there.
Almost lost the cup and you win it. The new European champions, the treble, the dream come true for you.
Oh, I can't believe that. I can't believe that. Football, bloody hell. But they never give in. That's the winner.
Welcome to the American Red Devils podcast. I'm John.
I'm Alex.
And we're bringing you the best Manchester United news from this side of the pond.
Woo, sir. How we doing? How we doing? It is summer. Muppetry is upon us. The Manchester United season 2021-2022 has come to a close. And it's a big summer for Manchester United. Ralph Rangnick gets the boot. What's new at Manchester United? They don't like straight talkers, sir. Big, big shoes and a big job for Erik ten Hag. Outgoings, they're catching speed. Financials dropped. How we feeling? How we doing? How's your summer going, sir?
Sir, you sound like you're on a summer vacation. Where are you at?
Sir, I am at the Jersey Shore. My son is right beyond me. He's saying hi. He's sending his best. They're about to go on a walk. And I'm just enjoying that lovely Jersey Shore weather, sir. Lots of Italian food. How we doing? How you feeling? How's Manchester United doing?
Gym, tan, laundry. Have you?
That's it. In that order.
You went to the gym, you're getting your tan, and then you're going to do your laundry, sir. Get the shirt before the shirt. Jersey Shore, wish I could join you. Just kidding. It is way too hot out in New Jersey. What is it, a cool 95 degrees with like 80% humidity?
Yesterday was a proper sweat-a-thon. It was like 93 with 66% humidity. Today, 30 degrees.
93.
It was like a day.
I'll tell you what.
From 93 to 63.
I'll tell you,
cool down.
Growing up on the East Coast, you know, wherever you're at, there, you know, you forget what it's like to just like be standing somewhere and just sweating. That's how hot it is. You know, obviously, gets hot out here in California, but the humidity is what makes you sweat. So I don't miss that. Speaking of sweating, Ralph Rangnick did a lot of sweating on the touchline this season for Manchester United. We have to sort of address this right off the top. Mutual. You said he got sacked. It's mutual, sir. You know what that means? They just paid that man his money, and he is on his way. We said it as soon as he announced that he took the Austria job. That's it. He ain't going to consult. The deal that we struck with him when we brought him in, very strange. Hey, Ralph Rangnick's not managed in 10 years. You know, godfather of the Gangan press. You could get it. We were excited about it. And then, the consultancy role was kind of thrown in there out of nowhere, like Manchester United does. And that was exciting because if Ralph Rangnick could evaluate the squad, then he could go upstairs. He's a proper technical director. Why not use his expertise? He can kind of evaluate what we need. And then the consulting role is where Ralph Rangnick, I think, would have benefited Manchester United, the consultancy, because he wasn't going to turn us around. He wasn't a Conte. He's a big picture club builder guy. But you know what? Manchester United likes to put square pegs in round holes. We took the club builder guy, brought him in as an interim manager, and then when it came time for him to add value upstairs, we're good. Whether he pissed people off, whether Ten Hag didn't like him, there's a lot of reasons this could happen. But just from a purely operational front office level, Murtaugh's first appointment, his first big decision at Manchester United, goes absolutely sideways. Complete failure. Absolute failure at Manchester United. I don't necessarily blame Rangnick. You got to blame the incompetence of that front office at Manchester United.
War, what is it good for? Absolutely nothing. It's like, sir, what is this front office good for? Absolutely nothing. Everything we had been told was a lie. And that's not new. That's not new for fans of this club. That's not new for people that have been paying attention and asking tough questions of the management, of the executive team, of the front office, of the CEO. He came in, like you said, he wasn't the Conte. He wasn't someone that was going to be able to turn the season around mid-flight and get us up, get us playing well, playing organized, playing with high tempo, and even put on a run for the top four. He was the guy to come in, oversee front office, oversee recruitment, you know, philosophy, all this stuff, like sports data, everything, you know, below the neck, if you will, as it relates to kind of approaching
the above
footballing
stuff.
above the neck, below the neck, whatever. He's in charge of all things.
Smart guy.
Outside of just coaching. He's a smart guy. He's a Bradyac. But either way, the whole point is he was supposed to come in and help us overhaul the club. The problem with Ralf Rangnick is he was too straight, bro. He called out everything he saw from the board, from the how they've invested in players, how we've like locked up these long-term contracts, the amount of investment that's needed, 10 players we need, a revolution. They were calling for an evolution. You're getting nothing. You're getting a decomposing of this body that is Manchester United that will continue to flounder because, like, everything you need to know about the fucking Richard Arnold Murtaugh era is this, dude. It's like, it's more the same. This is Edward Woodward incompetence, just in a different name and a fatter guy with a worse beard whose name is Richard Arnold. So they have no idea what they're doing. Erik ten Hag is fucking doomed because Ralf Rangnick, he wasn't the guy to be on the sideline and getting us organized and getting these bunch of prima donnas figured out and how to play football and how to play with high tempo and high energy. But he was the guy to put a football in oversight at the club. What he saw in 6 months, he said it straight up. For a lot of fans, it was very, very, you know, freshening to kind of get that approach and hear the honesty. And you know what? The board don't like honesty, bro. What did the Glazers say to him when he was getting when he got hijacked at Davos by Sky Sports? They've always invested in players. Yeah, they've always invested Manchester United money in players, sir. This is bad, bro. This just speaks to, like, nothing changing. Ain't nothing changing, and the Glazers are out. Erik ten Hag, he's fucked. He is so fucked. Like, because
gotta take a time out.
Dude, this is an indictment. This makes no sense. There is nobody at Manchester United that is more qualified to have the technical director job, the sporting director job, the football director job. None of them are even close. The people that they have in Newcastle are more qualified. At Brighton are more qualified. And now the one guy that has done it at multiple clubs, built the RB footballing empire from the ground up, got pushed out because he was too honest. Sir, it's a bad sign.
So you get a wicked echo wherever you're walking around, you know, for just giving you a heads up.
Jersey echo, bro. Let me work on that.
Yeah. You just stand in one place for like an hour while we chat about the dumpster fire that is Manchester United. Look, we're starting off. We got to give some hopium to some fans. First of all, he was a Spartak Moscow director of football, so you know, as far as you know, he has a big reputation in Germany. A lot of, you know, Klopp, Tuchel came out of his coaching tree, sort of speak. The style of football he pioneered was a big deal, but again, he was a front office technical director guy that we put in an interim manager role, which I thought was bizarre, and it only made sense based on this consultancy sort of back end piece that wasn't defined. I can't imagine that be properly defined at the time of negotiating the deal. Now, I think Rangnick might have been angling for the full-time job. Look, he did a really bad job. You have to also say that. Like, he did a really bad job, and United are like, hey, we're good. We don't want you anymore. I do think that United didn't like him. He didn't like United. I think he came in, like we've talked about and speculated on the pod, trying to do things one way. A lot of players didn't like that. Then the leaking started, and then he kind of – apparently there was a meeting with Pogba, Bruno, and Ronaldo to play a different way. He acquiesced to that request, and then we got what we got. And we saw it at Crystal Palace in person, arguably, you know, probably the worst season in Manchester United history since Sir Alex Ferguson left. But why was he there? And it's because of John Murtaugh. It was his first decision. He handpicked Rangnick to come in. He structured this deal for this club. And it went completely sideways, which is funny that we'll get to all the positive Arnold Murtaugh narrative later in the podcast from the Telegraph. But it is an interesting time at Manchester United. Rough season, a lot of fingers being pointed, and then a lot of transfer muppetry to solve all of our problems. And something tells me it might take a little longer than one transfer window.
So how's my audio? Is it better? I changed venues, or are you still getting the same effect?
I think you got to be outside sweating. I think that's probably the, you know, I know you're trying to be in the AAC.
I am outside. It is not sweatable weather, but I could definitely find a way to sweat. I'm trying not to be too doom and gloom, John.
You're pretty doom and gloom, right?
Because this is an indictment. This is like a club that doesn't know what it's doing, does stuff like this.
Okay, did Rangnick deserve it, though? Did he deserve it? the consultancy after the 6 months he managed? I mean, that's a valid question. Some people think this is the right call.
I believe some people think this is the right call because there's two sides to every argument, of course. And you would say that, like, damn, bro, that didn't go well, you being the interim manager. But that being said, why was he the interim manager? He shouldn't have been the interim manager in the first place.
Yes.
The argument we had made to ourselves was, well, he's going to get a really close look at all these players, the players that are going to stick around, the ones that aren't going to be good enough. You're going to have to get rid of them. The ones that are good enough that might just need like a little bit of extra TLC, the ones that are a project. He'll have a front view of all of that. That's a great place to be in as he kind of helps bring the next coach in. Instead, he's getting the German boot, the Das Boot, to Austria, bro, because, you know, did he do poorly or is it he's just too much of a straight shooter?
Well,
for
we said it. We said as soon as he took the Austria job, there goes consultancy. We said
we knew it.
Dude.
We
said
we knew
it. And then
we knew it. We knew there
the way he's talking.
Anyway, bro.
The way he was talking, too, is like you don't. And this is crazy. We'll get into this article in the Telegraph. But it talks about a culture where people don't say anything. And Rangnick said something and they're like, oh, we're changing that culture where you're allowed to speak your mind. Rangnick spoke his mind and he got fired. So again, so much spin at Manchester United, your head's spinning, and then all we have to look at is just the continued incompetence by the front office. And, you know, there's going to be some additions. We'll get into that too. But first, sir, quick PSA for the podcast. It's great to be talking to you about Manchester United, all of the stuff that's happened. Jesus, we took like a week off and it's just been absolutely crazy. If you want to support this podcast, check out our Discord channel. There's invites on Twitter and our website, www.americanreddevils.com. You want to support us, check out our Patreon page. We don't have any sponsors. This is the best way to support us. Check it out, www.patreon.com/americanreddevils. We give away pins, stickers, scarves, shirts, you name it. We post a behind-the-scenes Patreon episode every single month as well. So if you want more American Red Devils content, check us out, support us. Support independent fan content. Like I mentioned, check out our website. We have a great store as well as blog content. And drop a review wherever you listen to the podcast. I would have you do it, Alex, but I know you're sweating in the backyard somewhere in New Jersey. Another thing we got to talk about that's probably, you know, we started off pretty dark with the Rangnick news. The great news is the Scouse Bastards bottled the title. They bottled the Champions League. And then they have a giant bus parade to celebrate the Carabao Cup and FA Cup. Obviously, FA Cup, that's a real trophy there. But for all the hype that was around this team, for all the whinging that Klopp does, for them to come up and bottle those two trophies, it's spectacular. It's like, inject this into my veins. The Liverpool fans don't even text me back anymore. That's how good that's how good the banter is, baby. It's like, I'm sending memes, I'm sending everything. They don't even respond. They don't even respond because they knew all season, quad, best team ever, 99. That's totally in the rearview mirror. That team was no big deal. And it's like all the jawing, all the shit talking, Salah coming out pre-final, getting my revenge. And then they lose. And then, by the way, every Liverpool, every Scouse Bastard, this is the whole difference between them, is they lose and they have the audacity to say they're better than the team.
They're still saying it. They're still saying it. It's, you know, the Rangnick thing, that's done and dusted. Let's go on. You're right. Sir, it's so much easier to talk about winning the quad than it is to win the fucking quad. There's a reason nobody's done it. There's a reason, like, only one club has won the treble, and that was such an achievement. Because it's difficult to do. It's difficult to win one piece of actual silverware that matters, right? Carabao Cup is named after a fucking low-rent energy drink. No one gives a shit about the Carabao Cup. FA Cup matters. We care about that.
Chances I would matters. Take, I'll tell you. I'm hungry, we'll sir. You know,
we're starving over here. That's why.
I'm hungry. I'll take a Carabao. I'd take it right now.
I'll take a Carabao.
I'd take anything right now. I'm hungry. 5 long years. This podcast has never seen a trophy. We have never seen a trophy on this podcast. What would we do?
Sir, We were sitting in, I don't know where we were, the Landmark Hotel, Saturday night before the Hackney Half, and this guy was sweating the quad. They were talking the quad up, bro. They were still talking it on Sky. Ugh. They thought it was like a guarantee that Pep would blow it, which they almost did, to be fair, against Villa. And
Villa
PG.
Hit two. It was.
I know. They almost did. I'm just saying. So they didn't do it there. That was great. And then they lose the Champions League final, which is like marred with controversy, right? Like all these Liverpool fans showed up without tickets. and then like try to jump over the fence. And then of course they play the victim, and like, you know, I don't want anybody to get hurt, but all the Real Madrid fans were in their seats apparently on an orderly basis and had tickets, and the Liverpool fans, dude, I get it. You roll deep. They're a big club and the fans want to go, even if they don't have tickets, but like, sir, they have this ability
Who cares?
Always be the victim, bro. They're always the victim, which is an unbelievable thing. But hey, they lost Real Madrid fucking 14 Champions Leagues. That's unbelievable. Insane. They're just a hell of a club. And you know what? They're the good boogeyman to have to kind of get rid of your even bigger boogeyman. But I love it. The narrative hasn't changed.
No, the Scouse Bastards are poor losers, dude. That's the whole thing about it. They're the worst fans in the world. They act like they're humble. They're like, oh, you know. Then somehow they're hyping up the quad. Then they're complaining about the Diaz handball, which is going to cost them the league. Then they're saying they're the best team ever and they're not winning anything. It literally, all they do is just chat shit, and you're gonna look at it and be like, you won the league once, and they're gonna be like, yeah, but we lost it by a point. Do you remember when Manchester United lost the league to Man City on the final day of the season? Does anyone remember that season like in a positive manner? No, I punched a hole through the wall, sir. I was so upset we lost the title. That was the worst season ever. When you lose, it doesn't matter if you lose it by a point.
Still lost it.
It's like you lose it. It's like it's about winning. This is about win. Like Manchester United, it's about winning. I don't know what they want to play good looking football and lose. Is that now the argument that they have? They're like a parody of themselves. And what's amazing is they're going to go through this amazing period where they have a solid team. They're underpaid, by the way. All these players are underpaid.
Very underpaid. They're all winning.
And
they all
they're
going
to go. Salah going down to his last year. He's not going down to his last year because he wants to stay and sign a new deal. He's going down to his last year so you can pull an Mbappe, go somewhere for big money. Mane's going to go with big money. And then you're going to see this thing start going downhill. And then that's when Klopp's going to get even more hysterical. And you have this phase. You got to strike while the iron's hot. And I feel like they didn't really. They obviously get a Champions League. They get a league. But for them to have that those players on that type of money and come up short in big moments, that's the opposite of what Manchester United did. You talk about 08, 09, sir, all the big seasons that we've had at Manchester United, we always came up big, you know, and that is what it's all about. And if you don't, you come up short, nobody's going to remember the season. You win the FA Cup and the League Cup. I love it. It's just the banter's too good. It almost makes me feel better about how horrible United are.
Almost, because we are unfortunately still miles off of them. They have a competent front office. But they, like you said, Mane's out, dude. He's already said it. Salah's next. Who else is old? Van Dijk's like over 30. Hendo's over 30. Matip's over. They have an old effing team. And at the same time, they're going to have difficulty competing with oil-rich Man City. They're going to have difficulty competing with new financially viable owners in Chelsea, right? They got an American consortium behind them now. You're going to have upstarts in Newcastle. Maybe I don't think United's going to get their shit together until the Glazers leave, especially given how the whole
thing. But as long as it's not the Scouse Bastards, you know?
It's true. So City, let City run away with it, bro. They're going to keep spending money. They got to compete against Qatar's World Cup with PSG angling for things down there with Mbappe FC. But like you said, laugh at the Scousers. So they're the worst losers in the world, and they're the worst winners in the world. They get to be both. They're just the worst fans in the world. They're an unlikable club unless you root for them. And it's great. It's great. Good for Real Madrid. I just love seeing Klopp like bitch about like, oh, if the goalie is the player of the match, that's a bad sign.
Yeah, when they won the Champions League, Alisson was the man.
Alisson was the player. Yeah, exactly. Yes,
everything that it's like, dude, they're a parody. They're a parody of themselves. It's absolutely right. That's enough for the Scouse Bastards banter. Let's get into the transfer muppetry. We got a new intro here summing up how Manchester United are doing the transfer market here. All right, we are back. We got a little auctioneer there. I feel like United are all over the place. I feel that sums up Manchester United in the transfer window. Hey, over here. It's like that is exactly what it is. I'm just going to say we jump into this season of transfer muppetry. We try to keep it 100. We go to Fabrizio Romano, the real source. Whatever he says is true. We try to focus there and obviously speculate. For me, this is a season unlike any other, because for me, you know, it's about the front office. And what I need this front office to do is show me that they can do what they haven't done before, and that is sell players. So as far as buying players, I don't even think that's going to be the solution. You could add three players to this locker room, we're going to be horrible. It's really selling players. It's going to be getting rid of Aaron Wan-Bissaka, Harry Maguire, replacing those same players. So United always have, like, think about it. Lingard can't sell him. You know, Phil Jones barely could get it. Pereira can't sell him. We cannot sell players for the life of us. We always get focused on these big names. You know, one of them is De Jong. I mean, we can get into that. But I'm just saying I'm focused on the sales because we haven't done it well historically. Apparently, this is a whole new front office. We need the money to buy players. And will the Glazers take the loss on big money signings? So those are the three things, because you got to show me all three of those this offseason if you're going to see actual change at United. And so far, nothing on the outgoings.
No, you're absolutely right. So our first move of the transfer window is get rid of your consultant, technical director, guy who knows transfer targets throughout Europe. They don't want him, bro. First person out. So this is a big window. But based on everything we've seen to date, who is the biggest story around Manchester United targets? De Jong, another player that like doesn't want to come to United. How many times have we had players that like don't want to come to Manchester United? But because of our our stubbornness on transfers, or maybe just like them being pushed out of their current teams, which is actually happening in Barcelona, you know, they have the financial constraints where they can't afford De Jong, apparently, based on the other priorities they have. That would make him need to find a new club. That is not where we want to be. That is the exact opposite of what I'm going to talk about, the man who's gone, but Ralph talked about players getting their second or third contract that are going to be hungry and up and coming, that looking to make a name for themselves, that aren't just going for a fucking paycheck. De Jong is coming. Dude, it's the exact opposite of that. Big name, great player, but we need lots of players.
Dybala's next. We're getting Dybala and De Jong, you know?
That's
what we're getting.
Do you think anything's changed? Do you think this new front office?
No, I'm joking, but it's like crazy.
No, it's
not true. I was just joking, but like this is the... So if you're going to tell me what we need to do, we need to be super pragmatic. We'll get into the financials. We don't have a lot of money. United just are strapped for cash at the minute, and we can get into that. So it really comes down to, like, can you deal AWB for 25? You know, like, can you? That's a good deal. Sell Aaron Wan-Bissaka for 25 million. Can you get 20 for Harry Maguire? And then can you sign the young up-and-coming second contract right back, who I haven't heard of yet, but because we've changed the entire front office and things are going to operate differently than they have in the past, we are going to find that player who's hungry and wants to be at Manchester United. I don't need Frankie De Jong. This is like playing fantasy football. This is like playing FIFA. Yeah. This is like doing your season in FIFA. Yeah, I signed Frankie De Jong. It's like we just went through, go through the list. Cavani, great example. Player who just said, hey, find a club who can pay me a lot of money. He didn't like the weather in Manchester. You know, it's like you're going from Barcelona. Pogba knew about Manchester, a little different, but you know those types of signings that we made. Di Maria, another great one. This is the Sanchez, these type of big money names who like need to leave clubs, are looking to get paid. And De Jong and Ten Hag, they have the connection. You got to mention that. But if you're saying you're going to change things, big price tag, probably around 70 million pounds. 85 million euros. He doesn't want to come. He says he is not convinced to leave Barcelona. He wants Champions League football, and Manchester United are pushing, regardless of what the player wants, they're pushing to get a deal and almost shoehorn him at Manchester United. And given the motivation and the issues in the locker room, we're going to spend 65, 70 million on one player when that could realistically be two young, upcoming, hungry players that could play in the middle of the park for Manchester United. This shows me nothing's changed. It's the same old, same old. They're looking for big names, splashing cash. Like they even, like the rumors, we have 120 million. So you buy De Jong for like 70, 65, 70. Like, that's it. We need a right back. We need a center back. We need a striker.
70% of your transfer budget right there. And I thought we needed to buy a striker and a CB and probably a second midfielder.
So yesterday. All of a sudden, yesterday.
You're locking it all up into a player, like you said, that's going to need big wages, bro. He's on £400,000 a week. You think he's going to come to Manchester United for parity? No fucking way. You think he's going to play in Conference League for parity? He wants. He's going to want more.
Not Conference,
money.
Europa League.
Sorry, I forgot. We made it. Yeah. You think he's going to play Europa League?
Sir, Europa League's like, now we're happy about that, by the way, because they invented a shittier competition. I'm happy about that now. yesterday he says, quote, "I prefer to stay at Barca. I've said this before. Barcelona is the club of my dreams."
Jesus.
What the? Sir, it's like.
That should be the end of it. That should be the end of the dialogue there. We are pushing. I believe that, sir. What have we said about like our transfer approach in the back? In the past, they pick one big player that they can just like spin out into stories all summer long, and all of a sudden, like Frankie De Jong.
No,
makes
it's
the
because
list.
I think what happens is this. You know, we're doing it live here. Ten Hag wants him. Front office is going to try to get him as man, right? So like, but then what does that mean is going on at Manchester United? So you can get back to the Rangnick thing. Let's even go a little further back. Read the tea leaves. People are saying Ten Hag doesn't want Rangnick around because Ten Hag wants it his way or the highway. That's kind of the accepted party line and say, yeah, Ten Hag's such a good manager and he wants so much control. He can't have. He's so great that Rangnick just is in the way. Now, let's assume that's the case. And he wants to run the whole thing and he tells Murtaugh, hey, I want Frankie De Jong. It's my number one signing I want this summer. That could be what's driving this, but what does that mean? It means, what is the director of football's job? Is it to go get the players that the manager wants, and then we fire and hire new managers every, what I don't even know what the rate we are, probably less than 2 years now? I thought that was over. I thought we were going to have a director of football who understands the footballing vision of Manchester United, so we have continuity, so there isn't this revolving door. So either way, this doesn't look good from a front office trying to change its ways, because this shows me that either Ten Hag's running the show or Murtaugh is just doing the same thing. Arnold and Murtaugh are doing the same thing Woodward did, because this is not where we should be going. This is not the direction. I actually think we need to focus on getting players out first before we even think about trying to get names in. And this is Romano. Romano's tweeting this. This is real. Like, we are going for this now. I can't believe it.
And they keep talking about it. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, sir. How could I ever expect that this front office would do anything differently? Like you said, it's like we're going to go all in on another Dutch midfielder. But like, how do you know he's going to be able to transfer to the Premier League? That's why we've talked about making small, calculated bets on like up-and-coming players. Many times you haven't even heard of them. That's what I want. Like I said, I don't want any more of this FIFA approach. I want players that are going to be hungry, that are not already on $500,000 of wages a week, that are going to be like looking for like their first big time, big club contract and be willing to fight it and put it out on the badge, not another high-played glamour player. I don't know a lot about Frankie at all, bro, but I'm sure he's a decent player and a decent lad, but we don't need that right now. And I just think, like, you make a good point. It's like there should be the counterbalance in the DOF to being like, do we want to go all in on a Dutch midfielder that might not be able to be able to adapt to the play style of the Premier League given its physicality and speed? Well, it's what he wants. Like, so it just feels like the same shit over and over again. But based on the fact that they like booted Ralf Rangnick to Austria, I think it's going to be more exactly what we've seen before. Every transfer window we've talked about on this pod the last 5 years has basically gone the same way, give or take, you know, 50 million based on what window it was and COVID impact. I can't see anything different. I don't think it's going to be like smart buys.
But like let's talk about this then. So then, okay, we've definitely given, I think the key here is we're going in on the front office because there's so much PR about how they're not doing it the old way. They're changing. We're hiring people. There's a new structure. And then it seems to me that we're just doing the same thing that we did before. So like, obviously that's totally, we criticize the hell out of that. Regardless of price, put De Jong in the midfield for Manchester United. How do you feel about that as a Muppet, right? There has to be like, you know, he's a good player. I haven't watched him too much at Barca, but he doesn't seem to be doing well there.
Right.
He's on a lot of money, doesn't want to leave. So for me, the ingredients are like, it's like for all the young men out there, don't date a girl that doesn't want to be with you. You know, it's like you learn that at an early age. You don't chase. It's like someone wants to be with you. Great.
Yeah.
You know, like, girl focus on you.
Like, if some boy doesn't want to be with you, it's the same thing.
Focus on
like,
you.
Exactly.
If he doesn't want to join Manchester United, I don't want him.
I don't want him.
I don't want him, bro. If he doesn't want to join United, I don't want him. And that should literally be, they talked about in this article, oh, we're doing all these checks and all these new things in the front office. And then this player is saying he does not want to leave Barcelona and we're still trying to sign him. It's like the rule number one is I want to be at Manchester United. And if you don't want to be there, we don't want you. That has to be the first check. Before you get into the money and everything.
There has to be some learnings from the mistakes being made. And this is what, like, one of our major criticisms for this ownership and the extension of this ownership, which is the people that they hire, Ed Woodward, and then the new Ed Woodward, whose name is Richard Arnold. It's like, they don't learn from the mistakes that they've made, man. And they made so many mistakes, and they made the same mistakes over and over again. And one of those mistakes is angling for big name players and trying to convince them to like join the Manchester United project, the doomed Manchester United project, and put a square peg in a round hole, bro. It's like, we want players that are hungry and want to come play for the club. Frankie De Jong, he went from the Dutch league to La Liga. I don't know. I haven't heard anything about how great he's been for Barcelona. I actually haven't. I've heard about other players doing pretty well for Barcelona. Not about Frankie De Jong. I've just heard he's like, he's all right. And he's going to come to the Premier League, which is the most competitive, most physical, fastest league in the world. Dude, we have seen how did what's his name do? Who also looked
he
like
did
a world
play
class
in the
player.
Europa League this season with Barcelona.
Europa League, and how did Donny do, dude? Donny can't even get minutes under fucking Fat Frank at Everton. That's how shit he's been. And La Liga, it's better than the Dutch league, but it's on a different level in terms of physicality and speed as the Premier League. Every league,
yeah,
is.
But he's like he plays deep. He can run the show, right? You know, you're talking about a Matic replacement, not as big as Matic.
But he's not a destroyer,
the physical,
apparently.
No,
sorry, God.
No, I know, it, but you know, so that's De Jong. We'll keep you posted. I think like these guys are just making mistakes because this is, you know, I like Ten Hag. He says we have a big plan, but it just seems like this is all Ten Hag. All these moves are just all Ten Hag, and then fans are going to be like, well, why wouldn't they be Ten Hag's choices? The answer is you have to work with the manager to identify the talent. So like if he really wants De Jong and De Jong doesn't want United, then that's just not going to work. So you go down the list.
Right.
You know, so that's my issue is we're still pushing. Right. And I understand Murtaugh's trying to deliver for him. These are the types of push-pull. Now, the next name here, Jurrien Timber, we've talked about this. Romano says it's concrete and serious. Deal at early stages with Ajax. Timber's name has been discussed internally with Ten Hag alongside Pau Torres. Right now, Timber can play right back. He can play center back. Pau Torres, obviously, we know him, Villarreal center back, very good player. Timber, I don't think, is on the same level as Pau Torres. The only knock here I have is, hey, this is Ten Hag's guy. He played with him at Ajax. He knows him inside and out. Probably easy signing. £42 million, I'm talking here, for this player. If you can get this done for 28, 32, for me, the price is what's scary here, given EPL, not EPL proven. So there's a size factor. He's not that big, right? And you're talking about we desperately need a center back. So he could be right back, right? Ten Hag might be thinking he's the right back replacement for Aaron Wan-Bissaka. How do you feel here? I mean, this one to me seems like the price is going to be a little high.
It's a good point, but just to put into context, we spent 40 and change with add-ons on Ahmad Diallo, bro, and he'll never play a first-team game for Manchester United. he'll never even smell the field, bro. Like, you know, he's gone.
Same price for Pau Torres, though? I probably would go with Pau Torres.
I thought Pau Torres was being, like, 1.5 that price. I thought he was around 60, 65, what he was quoted. Obviously, more established player, better league, right? But that being said, what does Timber criteria does he fill? He wants to come to Manchester United. That's like it has been voiced in the press that apparently he does want to come to United. He wants to play with Eric Ten Hag.
Pau Torres is £45 million. His release clause is £55 million. So £45 million for Pau is what United's thinking about. It'd be in the same ballpark, but he obviously can't play center back and right back. Right? That's sort of the Jurrien Timber angle. Well, and you also have to give Ten Hag a pass on this, right? If he knows him and he's like, this is a great player, you have to give him a pass, right? You have to say, hey, he can bring him in. I trust him on that.
I would lean to the Timber versus Tal Torres because, like you said, he knows him. He's younger. He's more versatile. Apparently, he can actually play like as a CDM, as center back, as a right back. So he's probably super versatile. He's super fit. He's a little lad. He is a little lad. He's like my height, bro. He's like 5'9", 5'10", little guy. But he's insanely athletic. Pau, I think you need to, like I said, I would like fuck off of Frankie de Jong. I would have bought a couple of these free, box-to-box midfielders. And I'd buy both. I'd buy Timber as a backup and a right back, and I'd play Pau slotted in next to Varane because we all know that Maguire and Lindelof aren't good enough to start in this league. And that would be a good place to start because we know we need the kind of sound-up defense, but that would be my position. But Pau does look the real deal. He looks the real deal. He looks like an upgrade on Lindelof, but we've also seen that before. So it's like, it's about getting a lot of players in. Like you said,
we're not going to get a lot of players in. And that's the real problem. That's the real issue.
Bill has already signed more players than we'll probably sign all window.
I think we're talking three or four. Three or four, right? And then we're going to get to the third one here. Darwin Núñez, 22-year-old Benfica striker. He's keen to join United. 34 goals this season, and it's £68 million. So between De Jong, Timber, and Núñez, you're looking at probably £180 million. Obviously, we can sell Henderson, we can sell Wan-Bissaka, you can make up some money. We can also just loan the Glazers, can get some more money from the debt. We're freeing up a lot of wages with a lot of players leaving. Núñez, I watched some more video. I did have to go to the tape here on him. The fans online, and this is how United it has become. It's like the thing about you and me is like we were fans of this team before the social media, and the fans online right now is people arguing how Núñez is better than Haaland. Biased because we're going to try to get him. I just think it's like it becomes this argument. We're like, dude, he played Benfica. It's like, not that great of a league. Like, it's clearly there has to be like a discount because he didn't do like Haaland in the Bundesliga. It's like what we do to ourselves is crazy in this game. And the whole thing about Núñez is being like, again, not the player I would sign, too much money. And like these guys are saying, oh, we got all this data, we're doing all this new stuff in the front office, and you're going to go sign like the most like goal rank by goals. It's like so easy to find these players that they're coming up with. It's not like they're not doing any sort of analytics here to like really come up with these targets. It's like, of course Núñez is going to go. And apparently there's Real Madrid might be interested because of Mbappe, now owning PSG. What do you think of Núñez
owning PSG? That's a nice touch.
What do you think of, what do you think of Darwin? I watched the tape. What do you think?
He's a target man, dude. He's not Erling Haaland. Like he would be an okay striker. Erling Haaland is like a generational striker. He's a generational talent like Mbappe, right? And we had a chance to sign him. We had two chances to sign him.
Who bottled that?
Generational talent, sir. Richard, I can't even keep these idiots straight anymore. John Murtaugh, when he was our like fake DOF in 2019, blew the deal because he mixed up the time zones for £3 million. He's going to go City. He's going to score hundreds of goals in that shitty blue kit. And this guy will obviously be compared to him because he might be signed this window. And then, like, obviously, like United goes to the default, like, ours is better than yours. He's a different player. He's not as good of a player. He's not. His ceiling's not going to be anywhere.
He's got a Lukaku touch on him. Games, he's got that Lukaku touch.
He's a target man, dude. He's like a big target man. Like, if you got good crosses in, like, if
he reminds me of Martial. He reminds me of Martial because
he ain't worth £20.
Dude, he comes. Look, he does play centrally. He's actually all over the pitch. He has a great work rate defensively as well. I think I can get behind him because Ten Hag's looking for players that are hungry and work. And he does. Núñez, scrappy. But you want to think about what United's looking for and what we've been looking for a decade is like literally just the pure number nine hold up play. Like, back to goal, like number nine, like we haven't had it since Zlatan. We had Lukaku arguably, but we need that, and he seems to be not that. But he is a great attacker. The problem is United is we've had tons of great attackers and haven't been able to just, you know, you know what I'm saying? Like, we have Martial, Rashford, and you have all these kind of what play on the left, play on the right.
We need a nine.
It's the same thing.
Number nine.
You know?
We need a Ronaldo.
It's like he would play well. The argument for me for him is he would play great in a two with Ronaldo. He would play very well. If you put him on the left and Ronaldo through the middle, like if it was a 4-4-2, whatever you want to call it, if he was up front with Ronaldo, it would look good. Then obviously Ronaldo moves on, and then how does he look after that? And so maybe we're in that whole phase of just sign hungry players who work hard, and then I wouldn't be opposed to him. But it seems that whole, like, play on the left, play number nine, we could never figure it out, right? With Rashford, Martial, even Greenwood, obviously, who shall not be named anymore, his court case going on in the summer. But, you know, if he, play on the right, play in the middle, it's like that whole dynamic. It's like we need a guy who plays in the middle. Obviously, Rangnick wanted a guy in January. We did not get the guy.
We didn't get a guy up front. With Azakaria went to Juve, I believe. Dude, we didn't get him. He was free. That's just like, oh, we were waiting for the manager. Oh, they didn't know what they were doing. I agree, man. Like, we have wingers. We have Sancho. We have Rashford. He ain't going anywhere. He shouldn't. Martial, his broke ass, he's coming back, bro. Like, nobody want him. Like, Sevilla's like, we're good. Like, he's going to be a pain to sell. Pereira's coming back. He's not really an upfront attacker. He's more of a number 10, but he ain't taking Bruno's spot. And at the same time, you do have Ahmad Diallo. Like, you should. He spent $40 million. You should try and make it work before we sell him for a loss, because, dude, it's becoming this thing where, like, we really do bring, like, the young talent and just have them die. Like, their careers go to shit. And they have for Facundo. It has for Ahmad. And this guy, I want him to just be a target man.
You know who it is? It's Callum Wilson for Newcastle. He's, like, the classic English number
like
nine.
He bought Vardy. No, he should have bought, like,
but
Vardy.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But that's, like, he is an English number nine, like, plays the game, scrappy, like, can just bully people on the ball. Like, that is the type of player we need. Nunez, if you watch the tape, he is not that player, right? And obviously I'm thinking about number nine as far as watching 20 years of English football and what we're looking for. Like, Nunez would be a great attacker for United, but is he that guy to come in and play and do that job? And if I was the director of football, couldn't guarantee that, right? Like, Haaland is going to do that. Like, Haaland is going to get up there.
You still need another one. I think it's what you'd see is, like, he might be a valuable player for Manchester United. He might be able to be, like, a false nine, a second striker. But you'd probably be in a position where you're, like, dipping back into the transfer market for another number nine in a couple years, because you're going to want, like, you just want that pure play thing where someone just does that all day long, and that's why they're so good at it. Like Ronaldo. Like, he just, over his last 10 years, he's became a striker. And he's even better at it in some ways than he was playing off the wing, because, dude, that's what he specializes in. And if you just do one thing all day long, you're going to get better at it than doing five different things. Look at Wayne Rooney and his career at Manchester United. So I agree with you, but he's like the player we're being linked to. There's a kid in Germany, Anuku. He looks really good. He kind of looks more of the mold, John, that you're talking about, just like finisher, like fast finisher, like good with both feet.
That's Nunez, what we need. That's what we need.
I do. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Nunez
is in Cuckoo.
He might fit the bill because he's like hungry and also like he's physical, which would be good. And he probably works hard.
Problem is, he's like Uruguayan, South American players in Manchester.
No,
United.
Bro, Mate, let's go.
No, but you know what I'm saying. Like, we're just gonna go. We signed De Jong, Timber, Nunez, window over. Like, we're gonna be horrible next year. Like 100%. 100%.
Six for lucky.
Horrible.
We're
going to be horrible.
Come, bro.
Now we have to get into the outgoings. We got to say goodbye to Jesse Lingard. Obviously scored the FA Cup winner. Unfortunately, Romano tweeted out an unflattering photo of him where he looks like he's gained about 30 lbs. That is kind of how I will remember Jesse Lingard, keeping the same haircut he had as a 24-year-old, but then kind of becoming an overweight 30-year-old. Jesse Lingard, I can't blame him. I'm not going to like hate Jesse Lingard. I think we definitely screwed him up. I think clearly the move was to sell him to West Ham for whatever they offered, because it's better than nothing. So I do think United does have some blame in the situation. That being said, like, he didn't behave well generally. Like, I think during COVID, he obviously he did come out, had a lot of personal issues. He's been off the radar for 3 years. He goes to West Ham, play well. We should have sold him to West Ham, and then I don't think there would be this kind of like bad blood with him. When he went to West Ham and played well and found his football, like, you almost as like a director of football are like, oh, good for him. West Ham wants him. It's not going to work here, and you sell him. Like, even if 12 million, whatever, just get it done, move him on. And so I think there's a little bit of resentment that he has for United, because I'm sure there's a lot of shit that our front office did to piss him off as well. It just didn't work out, and there's no hard feelings. I just think the front office of United made it worse.
Which is not anything new, right? Based on like players and stories we've heard about Ed Woodward and like famous United players like RVP and Evra and Rio Ferdinand, like getting like no respect and the boot in like the most disrespectful way. That legacy has probably just continued, right? Like, I don't think like the front office operates with a degree of class that they used to. It's just like it's run by like fucking second rate thieves that are just doing the bidding of the Glazers. So that being said, like, I think we failed Jesse Lingard a lot more than we failed the next guy that we'll talk about in a minute, because like you said, we should have sold his ass in 2019-20 when he had that, like, when he was milli rocking at the Emirates and he started like releasing all these clothing lines and we're like, ah, he's all right.
No, he played well at the Emirates, and then he came in, he was playing very well, and then it went south, and then it like wasn't gonna work here, and then we loaned him to West Ham, and he played well for West Ham, and then you sell him to West Ham and you say, good for you, Jesse, and you know, he gets to move on, and you know, United didn't work out for him, and it's all good. The whole like keeping him and jockeying with West Ham for like, I don't know, for now we got nothing, and he's pissed off, and he's been
and
complaining,
we paid his wages
and,
last year.
And so the idea of he's posting West Ham social media and he's complaining. If I had to guess, I don't think Jesse Lingard's like a stand up guy, but like he seems to be like a man child a little bit. But you know, like, people go through things. I feel for him. I think it was a rough spell. I think it ended poorly. His brother, that post, that probably is what is giving me a little extra, you know, salt towards him, because it's just like, it's all about you, dude. And it's like, RVP didn't get a send off. Rio Ferdinand got like, thanks, bro, you're out of here. And these are real legends of the club,
real players.
And not saying that they're right, but just sort of the, I think you're starting to see the more sensitive players now that are coming through. And Jesse Lingard was definitely leaking to the press, like a lot of
definitely
leaks and stuff like that. And you know, he definitely was kind of like, you know, fuck this place, I'm out. And you know, we felt it, but again, I think if it was managed better, we wouldn't have gone that way. So I have to give him a little cover there. Didn't do much at United. A lot of hype behind him. Wish him well. Next guy,
still a young player. So they talk about him like he's a young player, but like you said,
doesn't look. He looks like Impossible to Me Pie Luke Shaw. You know, he did. You know,
free the impossible. And he was still on the meat pies.
All right, next player. It's so funny. Like, everyone's tweeting this social media. I think I said bye Felicia. Ooh. I think I said bye Felicia a long time ago. On Twitter, everyone's like getting mad at me. I'm like, Paul Pogba is gone, and it's like, good. Like, Paul Pogba's gone. We said it how many years ago? Paul Pogba wanted to leave.
3 years ago?
He wanted to leave 3 years ago when he was in Japan saying he wants a new challenge and he wants to leave. And obviously, you know, Mino Raiola, you know, rest in peace. His agent stirred up a lot of that, and the pre-champion. The only thing I will remember Paul Pogba for is the blue hair, two goals at the empty had. That was probably the biggest moment he had for our club. The reveal video and him slow jogging, and then him playing basketball when it was like uncertain where he was in the world. And he was like in the United States, like playing basketball when he apparently had an injury. So I think also him in the hoodie with Mourinho, and then Mourinho getting sacked, you know,
what about,
not great. Not great.
I want to throw one in the mix, John. What about, like, I think it was Liverpool this year on the road.
Yeah, I'm good.
He called it like the ninth minute. He's like, I'm good, bro. He's like, I got a cab to make. And like, he was like, I'm good. Like, so
he wasn't at Crystal Palace, and he was healthy.
So, how about, like, you know, the tie
in the sixth game of the Champions League group stage, or were like the night before the fucking game, he just, like, him and his agent just run their mouth about how he wants to leave United and all this shit, and then we like flop out.
Yeah, no, that's probably, yeah.
Dude, how many times were there like that? Like him, his agent, like you said, rest in peace, that's sad, and his goddamn brothers that were just like, would not constantly keep running their mouth. So the mistake of this club, and this is another Ed Woodward decision, I know it was, because this is probably not even like, what did Jose Mourinho want? This is like, what does Ed Woodward want? Because it will sell jerseys. Was madness bringing Paul Pogba back. The writing was on the wall in 2012 when Fergie let him leave, bro. They knew everything about his character and what type of player he was. And we knew it when he was at Juventus.
You and like, we were both excited. I'm going to say it. We are both excited
Muppets,
when he came back.
We'll
so
I
don't
DeGong,
think.
DeGong,
no,
DeGong,
no.
And that will fail too, sir.
No, you're wrong. The mistake was not. Was backing him over Mourinho and not selling Paul Pogba when you could get $60 million for him and send him to Real Madrid.
We did talk about how like Fergie let this guy leave and talks about in his book how like he surrounded himself with bad people.
It was kind of the agent. Fergie didn't say him. It was always
I know,
the
but
agent.
If you read it, it's like his agent and then like he could just tell the whole fucking team, the whole crew was kind of a shit show.
In Paul Pogba's career, player power has changed. I think there's probably no more player that you could see. He started it in a different era, and he grew up, and now it's a completely different era, right? So with Paul Pogba, you can say a lot of things about him. I think I'm glad he's leaving for the simple fact that the distraction he brought to Manchester United never outweighed the benefit on the field. It never outweighed the benefit on the field. And as a professional athlete, like you talked about those big moments where it was all about him, he's on a long-term deal, and him and his agent decided basically we're just going to complain very loudly at inopportune moments to try to get him out of Manchester United, even though he signed this deal. And lo and behold, unfortunately, when a player doesn't want to play for you, you got to get rid of him. Going back to that girlfriend analogy, it's like he doesn't want to play for you, he shouldn't be there. And that was like when Ronaldo wanted to go to Madrid, we let him go. And even though he's a great player, you got to move these guys on if they don't want to be there. Otherwise, they become a cancer in the locker room. And you go from Mourinho getting sacked to Ole Mr. Nice Guy to that Crystal Palace match where Pogba doesn't even show up. And that's a direct line to players taking over and having power in the locker room at Manchester United, and look at the product it gets you on the field. And so, unfortunately, Paul Pogba is a part of that. I wish him well. I don't think he's a bad player at all. I just think it's hard for him to be motivated. I think there's a lot of external factors. I think he could have handled it a little better, but I think his agent was probably part of it, where his style was very scorched earth, like, screw you, like, probably the most, like, his agent's tactics were just brutal. And, you know, obviously, that's business, right? I'm not going to say that he's brutal personally, but I'm just saying his tactics were, I think, way over the line, and that impacted what fans thought about Paul Pogba. For good or bad, that's just the way it is. And maybe it's the modern game, but I don't want another player like this at Manchester United, because it's about the team. It's not about you.
Good riddance, bro. There's a lot of players that let their agents do the talking, and some are provocative, and obviously Mino is the most provocative agent in the game. That's probably why he had some of the biggest clients in the game. Now, there's some that use Mino and don't say a fucking thing and let Mino run his fat. I don't want to talk ill of the dead, but they allowed him to just like run his mouth very effectively. But he would not just do that. He would also speak up on international break. He would speak up on summer, and he'd have his brother speak up as well. So it's like he never gave this club an inch of respect. You could certainly say that we let him down in certain regards, maybe not building the team around him. I think we tried to. It failed. They stopped investing in Jose. We should have sold him when Jose said, sell this guy. Or, like, you know, we're going to come at an impasse, and that's what happens. But ultimately, like, he never showed any respect to Manchester United.
No, well, here's the deal.
You couldn't find a player that showed less respect to Manchester United over the last couple decades.
It doesn't have to be that, about that. It's basically like, you have to take yourself back. When Pogba came in, it's his team. It was that deal where Paul Pogba was coming back to Manchester United. He should be it was like a captain like signing. The future of the club is Paul Pogba. We were going to build around Paul Pogba. We bring in Lukaku, right? We bring in Mourinho. It's all about Paul Pogba, and the Mourinho Pogba thing blew it all to hell, right? You know, it wasn't all bad. You have to think about it. It's like when it went bad, it went very bad. And that was the problem. It's like the Mourinho-Pogba saga cost us like the whole thing, right? That was really it, in my opinion. Because before that was Zlatan, a little bit of leadership in the locker room. Paul Pogba seemed to be a great leader. It was working for Manchester United. There were good times for Paul Pogba.
That's because he wasn't the United. Main guy. Because Zlatan,
but there was that locker room that he was a part of, that crew, Bailly, Paul Pogba, Zlatan, like this crew of players, and it was going good. And then the Mourinho came in, and Mourinho and him fell out, and it went really bad. So, and Mourinho's kind of, you know, he did win the Conference League with Roma, but Mourinho's been on the down since winning the Europa League and the Carabao Cup with United, and Paul, ever since this Paul Pogba feud, he's kind of been on the down. So maybe it was Mourinho to blame. I don't know, but there were good days. I have to say that, because that was a fun team. Mkhitaryan, Zlatan, Pogba, like, dude,
because he
was
good. The elder statesman in the club, dude. It's like as soon as he had to become the role model, he was bad at the role model job.
Yes,
him and Lingard
couldn't be
the role model instead of Zlatan and Rooney. Like they just don't have the level of maturity that those older players did.
And also, Lukaku didn't work out, and that was like a big Pogba, Lukaku. Those were going to be the guys. Like after Zlatan, it was going to be.
They fell out. They hated each other, and
then it didn't work.
Like came out of nowhere.
Yeah, and then you look at Lukaku at Chelsea, and it's like it's a delicate balance. But you know, I have to say. Pogba wrote on Instagram, quote, "I feel privileged to have played for this club. Many beautiful moments and memories, but most importantly, an unconditional support from the fans. Thank you at Manchester United." That's what he says. And then he OptiStats tweeted out, "Since rejoining the club in August 2013, Paul Pogba created more chances, 231, and provided more assists, 38, in the Premier League than any other Manchester United player during this period."
Who gives a shit, bro? That's a short list. It's like give Bruno one more year and he'll exceed that.
Whether you blame Paul Pogba or not, the one thing you have to look at is he left for nothing twice, and this is where
everyone got this club being run, dude.
Exactly. So I have the stats here on the money made on players from 2015-16 to 2021. No surprise, United is at the bottom of the list. We made $70 million. On players, selling players, absolutely nothing. Chelsea's made $460 million selling players. Liverpool's made $315 million selling players. Arsenal, $213 million. Spurs, $185 million. City make $242 million selling players. And what does that tell you? It tells you that when it doesn't work out, they sell them. Right? Think about it. Chelsea sold Hazard. Great time to sell him. Liverpool sold Coutinho. Great time to sell him. City sold Sané. Great time to sell him, right?
True.
Paul Pogba for $70 million 3 years ago to Real Madrid. Great time to sell him, right? Yep. And I bet
even
you go to Madrid
even for a loss,
and he'd go to Madrid, and I bet you his stats wouldn't be that amazing. He probably wouldn't be winning the Champions League. But again, you have to be able to sell players. The Scouse bastards, Karius didn't work out. Shipped them. Like that. You got to be ruthless out the door, and that's what I'm talking about. United selling players. We get an absolute F here. This is probably the biggest deficiency of our front office. That's what I want to see. These big transfer rumors, I'm not as excited about. It's the selling that we have to get better at. This is over 5 years, $70 million. We can't even sell Pereira.
We just talked about Johnny Boy. Like the last two players we spoke about are Lingard and Pogba. Both players should have been sold for money in the last 4 years. Neither were, and they both like. Not been good for the dressing room, and that is on the front office. So that's what you got to do. You got to.
Are we old men? Are we old men that are just complaining now? We're like old men.
We are old men yelling at clouds, sir. But
yes,
we
are literally
just.
We are literally old men yelling. But you have to say, for you know the season we've had, it doesn't make sense. Let's get into the news here. United in the news. Obviously, we've covered the transfer map tree. Now we're just going to jump in quickly. Financials. Hell of a week for us to take off here, sir. Third quarter for Manchester United.
How were they?
Not great. The main issue was that compared to the year prior, fans were in stands. We had extra $34 million in match day revenue, and the club was still losing money at COVID lockdown levels. Operating profit, negative $21.8 million. They had to add, they had to pull money off the revolver, which is essentially like a giant credit card. I think they have 150 to 200 million on revolver that they can basically use when needed. I think they have over 100 million drawn down on that as well. They had to add 10 million off of that. The net debt increased to 496 million. So revenue is back to normal. Business as usual. Fans and stands, no excuses for top line. And this, the operating expenses that are killing them. Apparently, this will, some wage alleviation with big money players leaving are going to help this. Stock was down 12%. Wall Street is beginning to question United because you go through COVID. Okay, you get a certain period of time. Now things are back to normal. You should start seeing the business kick off more cash flow, right? You look at adjusted EBITDA, 20 million. That should be in the 60s. Manchester United should be kicking off about 200 million in EBITDA. And we're well below the mark while we're heavily levered. And so this whole COVID narrative, oh, we're going to make more money on the back of COVID, and it's not coming. So that's why Wall Street's a little spooked here. I don't think they're running into the ground, so to speak, but the cash balance is a concern for transfers, right? So you want to talk about where's the money going to come from to buy players. We have $95 million in cash. We had $84 million in the quarter prior. The increase is literally drawing down the revolver. The revolver, the debt component is, for those who don't know, the revolver is like a credit card for a corporation. And then you have the term loan, which is that big, beefy £400 million loan that has not gone anywhere that they don't pay down.
It's like the mortgage on your house. Right?
Exactly.
It's just there.
Except they don't want to pay it down. So they just let the interest run indefinitely because they don't want to take a dollar from the company and put it in to the balance sheet. So essentially, what's going on at United is you can't use the revolver for transfers, right? So they do have liquidity up to $100 million because of the seasonality in the business. Now, the issue is we don't have a lot of cash. We're going in the summer. You don't have that match day revenue in the summer, and your operating costs are still high. So the next quarter will be very critical for United, but all this tells me is burns high, revenue's back to normal, and we're not making that much money, so much so we're dragging down more debt on the revolver. How are we going to be able to pay for all these transfers? Obviously, in the modern day, they're structured out. So you buy Frankie Dijon for 70. You don't pay 70 right now. You pay 30 up front, 10 million next season, 20 million the season after, right? They'll be structured. Those details we don't understand. But just generally not a lot of cash. I could see us doing 60 net realistically. And obviously you get to structured, you could get to that 100 million that they're floating. But again, so maxed out here from a financial perspective, even Wall Street's catching up with it. Richard Arnold's in a real tight spot here on the financials. It's not looking great for United. Something that I wish could say, we're back to normal. The cash balance is going up. We're stacking cash. We're back, baby. Give it a season, we'll have another $100 million in the coffers ready to go. I'm not seeing that here from the financials.
And it's indictment. It's indictment how the club's been run, right? Like even headed into COVID, sir, they were in a precarious position, and then they really kind of put themselves in a danger zone, right? Around like their cash balance and how much leverage they put on the balance sheet. At the end of the day, that's just going to give us less flexibility in the transfer market. It's going to give us more of a weight around the ankle of Erik ten Hag, he's gonna have to drag around, and it's gonna even speak to more of a reason to, like, you gotta sell off some of these players. You gotta get rid of Martial at 250 pounds a week, and all these players, whether overpaid, don't have a value for the club, and it's gonna just give them a lack of flexibility. So the real question I have to you, John, is like, how long can they kick this can before they would be forced to sell? Can they just like basically maintain this fiscal position indefinitely, you know, like
$60 million
in cash, just hovering at they're basically there. I would imagine that's like the bank minimum for all their credit facilities. They have to have like a minimum amount of cash, and it's probably like 60, 70 million. And they can just,
as long as
they
maintain EBITDA. That, it's annual EBITDA. And then there's actually a interest rate ratchet. So based on how much EBITDA they have, then they have to pay more money on the interest. Now the problem is, for me, we had $300 million going into COVID. No, $300 million on the balance sheet pre-COVID. Then we kind of ran it down, and then COVID hit. We got screwed. So we've never really made the recovery from COVID. The problem is the operating expense at the moment, and obviously we're offloading a ton of wages. We really need to sell players, offload those big money wages, which are going to go off the books, like Cavani, you know, Martial, Pogba, Lingard even. This is not an easy job for Arnold. The real problem for them is not the financials. They can manage the situation. It's how are they going to invest and deliver for Erik ten Hag and not just have Murtaugh and ten Hag sitting there with fans screaming Joel Glazer's going to die because they literally had a horrible window and you're stuck with like literally 80% of the same players because there's not enough money to go around and rebuild anything. They're putting $5 million into Carrington. That tells you everything you need to know.
Five million. City spent $120 million
to redo Carrington. If you went to somebody who worked in
Leicester's got a nice result.
I know.
Leicester's going to be state of the art. Spent $100 million.
I could go to the UK, right? And I could be like, I have this giant facility like Carrington, and I hire a bunch of contractors. I have them come in and be like, what's it going to cost for you to really like redo the place and make it look good? Like, what do you think's the lowest number you're going to get?
$50 million.
$50 million. Now, if you said, what is the absolute minimum amount of money I can spend to do anything? $5 million would be like, what's the minimum amount of money I can do to like put that like fake wood paneling next to the pool? It'd be like $5 million.
I literally drove
down a road here in California, not a big road, and it's like $3.5 million to pave it. You know, it's like they're redoing the road. It's going to cost $3.5 million. It's like
$5 million.
There's nothing that you could do to Carrington for £5 million. Like, I mean, like that's nothing. And but that shows you the squeeze. So the whole point is they're going to take that $5 million. They're going to sell it pretty good, which is what they're doing in this new article here. We're going to get into this before we get into that. The secrets of Manchester United's great summer rebuild, which does include the $5 million upgrade to Carrington.
United, who's puffing this nonsense? Telegraph?
Dunker at the Telegraph.
Dunker.
Dunker? Is it Dunker? I had to like sign up for a behind the paywall. James Ducker. But this is like the big article. He gets access to United. Before we get into that one, United name Andy O'Boyle to join Manchester United as the I think junior football director. I think that's what he's going to do. Deputy football director to Murtaugh. Apparently Murtaugh is spread very thin. He's got a lot of work to do. And then Andy O'Boyle is going to come in and do it all. He is basically a former fitness coach at Liverpool. Again, he's in the performance side of things, which is really weird to me. I don't necessarily hate him, but if you were telling me that he was going to be, you know, head of elite performance for the first team, I would say that seems on brand with his experience, but now he's going to be sort of the catch-all deputy director. So everything Murtaugh doesn't want to do, he's going to do. His arrival will free up around two-thirds of Murtaugh's week by removing much of the day-to-day bureaucracy that at present comes across his desk and enable him to narrow his focus on the first team and critical issues of recruitment as he works to reshape the squad under new manager Erik ten Hag. Now, does that sound like a good hire?
No. Where's the job description, sir? We talk about it ourselves. It's like, job. What is the job that this person's going to be hired to do? Free up two-thirds of John Murtaugh's time? Well,
women's
that just
team,
sounds odd. More like than half of his time.
Bureaucracy. Like, and then this guy's like a former fitness coach.
But
Murtaugh is a former fitness coach. And now we have another fitness coach freeing up more time for another fitness coach.
Cheap. He's a cheap hire.
I don't like it.
Cheaper than Paul Mitchell. Paul Mitchell is fucking expensive. I'll tell you what. Ralph Rangnick and what he wants to do. That's probably the whole thing that comes along with it. It's probably expensive. This guy, Danny Boyle, he's cheap, bro.
Andy O'Boyle.
Andy O'Brien, he's cheap, bro. That guy's cheap, and that's why they did it.
This is the narrative you're getting from the club now. So we're going to get into the Ducker article here. It's revealed the secrets of Manchester United's great summer rebuild. We have to cover this. This is what the club is putting out there. This is the whole hit job of like what was wrong with United, and oh, by the way, we have our Golden Knights, Richard Arnold and John Murtaugh. They are fixing everything here at United.
Are they puffing them up big time, those two Nunties?
So the article starts out saying that there was a certain culture at United and there was a fear of speaking up. Quote, there's a quote in here from someone inside the club. They don't say who these sources are. They said, it's like a membership club. The weak people at the top employed weak people below them who do not argue, who do not speak their mind, and it meant no elite environment where you openly question and challenge each other. It has infected the entire club. So they're blaming this whole, you know, no one speaking up for the reason why everything was horrible, which I imagine Ed Woodward has thin skin. You tell him something that he doesn't like and you're out of there, given he focused a lot on PR.
I imagine the Blazers have thin skin too, bro, based on how that interview went in Davos. Like, that guy ain't got no thick skin. He's not used to getting real criticism.
And then talking about Richard Arnold, they're like, it feels like a hurricane coming in. United have hired consulting giants Korn Ferry, which must be like really good consultants in the UK.
Someone should consult them on Korn Ferry's name.
First of all, because I don't put like McKinsey, you know, I could get around that like or something.
They do like corporate recruitment, sir. They do like headhunting. Like they're not like BCG, bro. They're like who?
So they blame this whole. This is the first hole I can poke in. Is they blame this whole fear of speaking up thing, and Rangnick seemed to be like the guy who spoke up, and he's gone. So I think that's very strange. speaking of Richard Arnold, they describe him as a fiercely demanding individual with no interest in the spotlight. His friends and predecessor at Woodward seemed to enjoy the spotlight. Arnold was thought to be reticent at first about the chief executive's role amid doubts he would not have the autonomy to make a real difference, but he does. So a fiercely demanding. Does he look like he's a fiercely demanding individual?
No.
You look at that guy, it's like, I look at Ten Hag, that guy, fiercely demanding individual. Right. I think Arnold's background, accounting, right? Comes out of accounting. He's on the money side. He's on that balance sheet we just talked about. Nothing to do with football. No background in football. Edwin van der Sar, CEO of Ajax, doing really well. Background in football. This is the difference, right? So you can't shine shit and sell it to me here. Richard Arnold, I know what he is. He's doing the bidding for the Glazers. Now you get into the Murtaugh side, a lot more on Murtaugh. They say he's affable and approachable. Murtaugh is not someone who shouts and screams, but there have been signs he is unafraid to put noses out of joint or deliver home truths. He has been in the dressing room to challenge players over unacceptable standards when others would not this season. And last month, he oversaw the departures of longstanding senior scouts Jim Lawler and Marcel Bout. Now, obviously, you like to see the scouting department get shaken up a little bit. But this whole, like, puffing up Murtaugh, it's like, he appointed Rangnick. He bottled signing Erling Haaland. Like, those are the two things he has on a CV. He has a physio background. He has no experience as being a technical director or director of football.
Brought in by David Moyes.
Exactly. He has, like, the first thing he did was appoint Ralf Rangnick. Fail.
Fired him.
Could have signed Haaland for £3 million. Fail. Like, you can't shine shit. Murtaugh isn't a director of football.
Puff piece, sir. It's all puff.
A source close to Murtaugh said he doesn't want to be sat there in a few years thinking about things he should have done and didn't. Murtaugh has spent a lot of time in recent weeks traveling around Europe and meeting counterparts at rival clubs trying to figure out what his job is. Obviously, I added that part at the end. But like, he's literally meeting. He's going to other clubs, meeting people and trying to figure out what the fuck to do. And this is the biggest football club in the world. How the fuck does this guy get this job? How does he get this job? It makes no sense. Paul Mitchell, you hire Paul Mitchell and then I'm like, okay, Murtaugh will oversee Mitchell doing all the football stuff. I get it.
No, you got O'Boyle, bro.
Why didn't we hire him?
You got the Liverpool fitness coach because he's in charge of high knees over at Merseyside.
Paul Mitchell's like, how much money are you going to spend? Oh, this is just a shell of a company for the Glazers and there's nothing?
For the Glazers? Yeah, sounds great.
And then it goes on to say, with director of football negotiations, Matt Judge is serving his notice. He's serving his notice after deciding to leave the club. Murtaugh is taking on the responsibility of handling the higher profile and more sensitive negotiations, assisted by Brown, the club's finance and legals teams. So basically, Murtaugh, what experience does he have negotiating like transfer deals?
None.
Exactly.
How much did Judge have? None, dude.
Exactly.
That's why he failed miserably. Why did Ed Woodward fail? Because he had no experience. Why will John Murtaugh fail? Because he has no experience. Richard Arnold, he has no experience. He will fail. Darren Fletcher, never done it before. He will fail.
Well, it goes on to say, the article says, Darren Fletcher's role as technical director will also become more defined. It will
just
become
like, Ralph's was going to become more defined.
This is literally a Manchester United puff piece.
They're spinning
and
us,
they,
bro. They're
no,
just
they
spinning
literally
us.
Just say, like, it's literally just like, Darren Fletcher's role is TBD, but it will be figured out.
Like, he's been there for 6 months. He's been there for 6 months. They
Darren
no
Fletcher's great.
Ralph said he had no idea what Darren Fletcher does besides, like, shout instructions from the sideline. He had to ask him to stop yelling instructions to the players.
So why won't the Glazers invest in a competent front office? Is because front offices
them.
Will have backbones and they have prior resumes and they don't need Manchester United and they will expose this club for the sham that it is. That's why you have yes men here. That's why Rangnick, look, football was shit, but he said it. He called out Jesse. He called out Martial. Those players, in my mind, probably need calling out. He said basically this team needs to be gutted, and I appreciated what he said in the press, honestly, and he's gone. And that tells you everything you need to know. Thin skin still exists. They're going to underinvest. It's not open-heart surgery. They're just going to polish up a turd sandwich, sir, and sell it to us.
Sorry,
that's what it's going to be.
We should put a dagger in this bitch, but I'm with you, bro. It's like if they really wanted a revolution, Ralph Rangnick would be like the senior technical director of football at this club. Paul Mitchell would be his head of scouting. John Murtaugh would report to Ralph, and it would be like, let's go, bro. Let's like call out things as we see it. And instead, he's like, who the fuck is Darren Fletcher? What does he do? I have no idea. And they're like, and then Darren Fletcher, like 3 days later, is like, well, everybody knows what I do. I do a very important job here. And here's the reason, sir. Why do they not want to put legit people in? Because legit people cost a lot of money. And I know, like, Ed Woodward was, like, the highest-paid executive in Premier League, which is laughable. But all those other guys, like, they cost a lot. Like, Paul Mitchell cost a lot. The guy who got poached from Brighton and went to Newcastle, he would cost a lot. And if you wanted to bring in, like, a competent front office that is going to have, like, the steel to compete with the cities and PSGs and Real Madrids of the world, you need people that know what the fuck they're doing, and they're expensive. And City has them. Chelsea has them. PSG might have, I don't even know. That place seems like a bit of a shit show. But, like, the best clubs have them, bro. And you don't succeed without them. And, like, right now we have people, like you said, it's like we have a former accountant that job is to make sure the company doesn't run out of money and keeps paying the dividend. By the way, you missed that from the financials. They took their dividend like you.
No, I know. That's to be expected. But so, like, let's finish up here. They do comment on recruit. I'm trying to give the puff piece. Like, I'm trying to give the fans what they're saying. This is the club saying what. This is the line that they're putting out there. And even this line is hysterical because it just, they're not saying anything. They're like, say something without saying anything. It's like on recruitment, Dominic Jordan, he came in as director of data science. He's going to help modernize the approach. We're going to modernize the approach. That's what this club gives you. Modernize the approach. Spin zone. Like, we're no longer going to go by big names. We're going to be looking at statistics. We're going to be looking at second contracts. We're going to be looking at young, up-and-coming hung players. There's nothing. There's no criteria. They give you absolutely nothing. They go on to say, Simon Wells, Mick Court, and Jose Mayorga are the senior scouts, and the setup will be coordinated by Steve Brown, who will be the head of recruitment operations. He does not give an opinion on players, but seeks to ensure there's a robust process that targets are watched in an array of different contexts and by multiple eyeballs. This is so, like,
it's just nonsense.
It's just like, you know, when in our finance jobs, sometimes you're selling companies and you got to write some bullshit. What? Steve Brown, the head of recruitment, does not give an opinion on players, but seeks to ensure there's a robust process. Like, this is what the club is giving you, and this is what is crazy, because on social media, I see this narrative that United are restructuring, and it's going to be like, this is fucking nothing. This is absolutely nothing. This is a nothing burger. It's literally Arnold and Murtaugh doing nothing.
Nothing. And you put the context, right? Oh, we're looking for up-and-coming hungry players. Frankie DeJong at Barcelona, who doesn't want to come and who's on top bucket wages, is not that profile. So everything that they're telling you about how they're getting better, they're getting smarter, we're more nimble, we're like, we're going to be so agile in the transfer market, you wouldn't fucking believe it. Dude, it's bullshit. So, like, the fans, we know it, dude. So just,
but
like,
change takes time. That if you're going to change, then this is the problem I guess I'm most frustrated with, is if you're going to change, it's going to take 3 to 4 seasons, and it is going to suck. They're trying to spin like this, like, quick. It's the open-heart surgery versus whatever Rangnick said, and then they came out and said it wasn't that. This is, they're just trying to spin the change. This team is not ready. They should be like,
change.
We are going to hire a world-class director of football. John Murtaugh will work with that individual when they come in. We do not have that person yet who will be in charge of structuring the team with Ten Hag. It should be a long-term process. It's not just done and here you go, we're fixed, Manchester United are fixed. It's going to be a long process that is well thought out, that will find individuals with the correct background for the right roles, instead of like, hey, Murtaugh's doing too much shit and some guy's going to do a lot of that shit now. It's like, that's what this club is telling you and spinning out some like giant restructure story. And you got to be careful, because you actually read it, it's a bunch of spin zone here. And, you know, this is setting up to be another Glazer gotcha, tight budget season because of the shit financials. And Murtaugh, like, his track record, Rangnick didn't go out, and now he's getting Ten Hag's boys. And this summer, the start to it just feels like it feels like Woodward 2.0. How do you feel about it?
So you know how I feel. You've been parroting 10 minutes of nonsense from the Glazers. It is Woodward 2.0. It's his fucking, it's his, like, it was his number two. They didn't bring in somebody with a footballing background. They brought in another PwC accountant to run the club. So why would we expect anything to change? The Glazers aren't serious about changing. They don't want to spend any of their own money on the facilities, the stadium, the overall health of the club, the squad. Dude, they don't want any money in. All the money that they've ever put in has been Manchester United's, like, revenue, bro, that they just took off the top and just, like, put back in while taking as much money off the top as possible. So the thing is, Leopard don't change its spots. And these fuckers are not changing nothing, bro. Like, they're the same people, the same guy who got, like, spooking up into someone like a, you know, like, went up to have her an interview at Davos, bro. Like, that guy's not used to answering questions, doesn't want to answer questions, above reproach, and they're not the kind of people that will ever admit what they've done wrong, because they're shameless, dude. They're shameless based on the way they bought the club, based on the way they treated the fans. They didn't talk to us for 20 years. They lied to us left, right, and center. They put in puppets and people that are just not qualified to be there. Every single person in a position of power above Erik ten Hag is not qualified to be there. Every single one, dude.
No, it's true. That's the problem. But that's the problem. That's always been the problem. Don't tell me Murtaugh's got the...
Richard Arnold isn't qualified to be the CEO of fucking Newcastle or Brighton or what Aston Villa, dude. He's not qualified to run a Premier League club. Maybe Championship if he wants, like, if someone give him a shot because he's, like, a good guy and he's a hard worker. But, like, dude, none of them are qualified, and that's the thing. At the end of the day, none of them belong there. And they can puff it all up about how they're, like, really hardworking and, like, he's a no-nonsense guy and he's...
No-nonsense.
So what's your CV, bro? What is your CV? Where have you done it before? Or you done it nowhere before? You were, like, some dope that, like, fucking... Literally, like, what did one of the biggest mistakes that Moisey did was fire everybody. Fire all of Fergie's staff. And this is one of the guys that he brought in instead of the staff that was there before. He's not qualified. None of them are qualified. That's the end of the story.
And the thing about next season, you got to watch out for the Newcastles of the world. I think
they're coming up, dude.
9 points off us. I think they lost their first 14 games. Like, and that's the difference. You know, they just hired Dan Ashworth, probably the best talent, best DOF talent in the league. We weren't even in the conversation. Paul Mitchell missing. Like, you get me, Paul Mitchell. Okay, Rangnick doesn't work out, but Paul Mitchell's involved now, and you really need somebody.
He's 30 years younger, bro. I'd gladly take Paul Mitchell. Like,
no, but you need somebody in that role. Like, I don't hate John Murtaugh. I bet you he's a good guy. But, like, if Murtaugh is going to be above, like, a Paul Mitchell, and Paul Mitchell's going to have a certain role and then help Murtaugh learn, like, that's what you have to identify the weaknesses and then, you know, plug them. And I see a lot of spin zone for United, and, you know, we know what's new. Jumping into fan questions here. I know this is a marathon pod. We're going to change the name of the pod to Grumpy Old Men. I think that's more appropriate just because I get offended when I see this bullshit in the press.
I know.
But people are talking about it. It's a big thing on social. Oh, this big bill. We got to go through. What are they saying?
Call me on step one, bro. September 1st. I'll let me know how this window is going to be just like every other window.
Yeah. at J.A. Smith 9911, quote, Ten Hag's top priority has to be to establish order and discipline in the team and locker room. As much as we need signings, we also need to get the bad apples out and start playing disciplined football as a team. That's what I'm hoping to see next season. Long road ahead of us, .. I think it is very well said from Jason. Like, it has to be establishing order day one. And the 100%. Big question of that is getting the bad apples out. At
Someone
Brinker
take care of himself. Like you said, sales are going to be big.
At Brinker 02, two things. One, with hindsight, would it have been better to let Ole finish the season? What do you think? Ole and you saw Ole and you saw Ralph.
What was the difference? Not much.
Yeah.
About the same bunch of losers. Like, I'm happy we got Ralph because he was so fucking fun to have. He was so refreshing to be like, these guys are a bunch of morons. Like, that was good.
Yeah, but the pressers, dude, whenever you're watching pressers and the, like,
that was
like,
more fun the game.
But I know, but Mourinho, remember when Mourinho was melting down? Like, you would watch the pressers and that's a sign of a bad time.
But
when you're watching pressers, you're like,
we're a terribly run club. I still say we're the worst run club.
I agree. He had good pressers. He had good press conferences and said
it
like it was.
Jose was like an actor. Jose was like a theater actor, you know? Like, he could be like a one-man show in London, bro. Like, on the West End. Like, doing shows. Like, because he's like a dark character, you know? But, like, Ralph was just like a straight shooter. They'd ask him questions, and he would just, like, answer it. And then that would be like, holy shit, he answered that pretty honestly. What does Darren Fletcher do? Who knows what Darren Fletcher does, bro? Even Darren Fletcher doesn't know.
He collects a paycheck and tells everyone how great the Glazers are. What are your thoughts on the Eric Ten Hag completely distancing himself from Ralph during his initial interviews? That whole Eric Ten Hag, Ralph Rangnick, you know, they didn't get along.
I don't believe that at all. At all. Based on the relationship and everything that was like coming up before the Austria thing was announced, that as soon as that was announced, I'm sure Eric was told, hey, we want you to be the guy. Ralph's going to go over there. You know, he's not right for us, but you're right for us. Dude, they lie. They've lied to every coach that's ever joined this club. They've lied to the players. They've lied to the fans for 20 years. Since the day they got their tentacles in this club, they've been lying about everything. They will continue to lie.
I hate being like, I don't want this podcast to be like this. You know, it's because what Manchester United represents to me is like, never say die, never give up. Everything for
and
the shirt, like
before.
It's just like
we've
it's a
owners.
Lifestyle.
This is part of the deal.
Like yes. Like this club is inspiration. Like what it means to me over 20 years. Like looking at this badge, what this club means to me, and it's just like Manchester United. To see it where it is, to see those players at Crystal Palace not try, it's heartbreaking, and that's why they're rightfully so slinging all the mud that we're doing. Last one here at Jamal Mota, quote, sirs, I can't. And then again, I can totally believe they sacked Ralph just when his real job was coming. What a waste of time. Called out the organization for stupidity and they sacked him for making their foolishness known. Ten Hag seems strong and purposeful, but hashtag Glazers out. Totally. And the number one most Glazer Arnold, whatever thing is the fact that they have an article saying the problem was no one speaks up and then Rangnick speaks up and he's gone. That exactly. is literally, we all know that's the culture. They're so sensitive. That's why nobody talks about the financials. Like you could tell like the whole, like the
just
way people act around it is
we
so
in the
weird.
Team. Like that's the party line, right? We always invest in the team. Like Richard Arnold said the same thing, bro. And you know what? So did Darren Fletcher. He's like, we've always spent. They're just regurgitating the party line, dude. It's like
that's
a goddamn
so,
cult.
I can never be that person,
Blazer, dude.
I got the opposite of that in my DNA. Like I can never be that person, right? It's like
that's why we have this pod, sir. That's why we have this pod. So we can just spit hot truths, and we can stand up for the greatest club and the greatest fans in the world, bro. They do not deserve this club. We need to push them out actively and incessantly. We should never let off, bro. We cannot.
We are
let
not.
Off,
they, have you heard the pod? Never, have you heard the pod?
They will never change. They will never get better. They will never see us as anything but a wealth extraction vehicle. We have to get rid of them, bro, because they are everything wrong with this club. And they just, dude, they don't represent us in the right way, because this is a great club, great history, with unbelievable fans, and it's run by like a bunch of morons.
To have a soul. The club has to have a soul. Sir Alex Ferguson was that soul, despite the ownership, right? And now the Glazers have gutted it, and you look at it on the field, the organization, the front office, how, like, this organization doesn't take football seriously. Like, yeah, pay them a lot of money. They'll go out there and do something. And you see what Crystal Palace is. It's nothing. There's no soul at this club. And it's hashtag Glazers out till the day we die. What a podcast. If you like the American Red Devils, check us out. Check out our Discord channel. You can get an invite on Twitter or our website, www.americareddevils.com. Click on store. Check out our blog content. Support us on Patreon, www.patreon.com/americareddevils. Write a review wherever you listen. It helps. It's just me and Alex spitting hot fire about Manchester United. We love it, but it's
on
just like
on vacay, the way throw me stairs, sir. It was a hell of a pod.
Yeah, you're dropping 90 minutes. You know, you're running a lot for this pod. We appreciate it. Enjoy the Jersey Shore, sir. I will close out the podcast without you. Tell the wife I say hi.
Appreciate you, sir. Thank you so much, dude. American Red Devils forever.
Hashtag lasers out.
Lasers out forever. Peace.
All right, Alex, what a time. What a grumpy old man pod. All right, we're going to get in our top 10 cities last 7 days. Ormond Beach, Florida, shout out. Santa Rosa, California, appreciate you. Blackpool, United Kingdom. Sterling, Virginia. White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia. Charlotte, North Carolina. Winnetka, Illinois. Shepherd's Bush, United Kingdom. London, how you doing? Notting Hill Gate. We appreciate all the American Red Devils listening week in, week out. We're going to leave you with a song that matters so much to us right now. The Scouse Bastards, they didn't do it. It's 20 times Man United. Everyone have a great week. We'll get you another podcast next week when Alex is back from vacay. And let's hope the ship can be righted and we have a decent summer and can see some better football next season. All right, 20 times Man United.